This usually brings on many imperfections of anger. When God no longer gives them the spiritual sweetness and delight they formerly found in prayer and in the performance of good works, their mood tends to become sour. They become easily irritated and sometimes are so unbearable that no one can endure them. Such persons are not at fault. Now listen to that. See? If you didn't know what was happening in them, you'd say, there's a artificial Christian seeking a deep life, and look at him. Such persons are not at fault if the feelings of dryness and desolation are not allowed to influence them. In other words, leading them to depression and anger. This imperfection will be removed through the dryness and affliction of the dark night. Again, a conclusion from what we've said already is the dark night is emotional healing in a long-range process. But look at what's happening today. It's a short process. So in other words, we need an evaluation of even this tremendous writer. In this category, we place beginners who display an indiscreet zeal over the sins of others, rebuking them and sometimes doing so with anger. Behind this attitude is the impression that they are masters of virtue. This is contrary to the virtue of meekness. That means enduring the mistakes and faults of others. Still others, when they become conscious of their faults, become angry with themselves with a proud impatience. They expect to be saints next Sunday at 6 o'clock in the evening. Many make all kinds of plans and many resolutions to better themselves, but because they are not humble and are lacking in that holy distrust of self, they frequently break their promises, and the more they break their resolutions, the more angry they become. Here we have the case of people getting ahead of God and His grace and having to wait for God's time. Then there's the other extreme, those who are too patient and move like the turtle. And God would have them more eager to grow in holiness. They're the ones that Teresa says, I wish God had built a fire under them. And we'd say today, tie them to a rocket. And then there are the imperfections of what we call spiritual gluttony. Very few beginners are free of what can be called spiritual gluttony. The reason is this: by the way God made us, we are filled with delight and pleasure when we sense God's love within us. And of course, we want more and can never have enough of this. God gives it for good reasons. He wants to win our love for Him and complete surrender, and also to build up within us a holy enthusiasm for goodness and perfection. But we want this weakness to go on forever and fail to notice that we are selfish about it. We very often pray only because of the sweetness there and the delight we have in doing good works. But God wants us to love Him, not for His gifts, but for Himself, and to be detached from everything that can become an obstacle to that love and union with Him. Some people are so greedy for this sweetness and joy in spiritual things that they go to extremes. For example, they literally kill themselves with penances, severely weaken themselves with fasts, and do this without the advice or permission of their spiritual directors. They even hide them from those who should know, and some even perform penances that would be contrary to what God wishes of them in their state of life. If you don't believe that, I can tell you the truth of that. I did it, and I know people who did. You could kill yourself. Yes. The love of God can be so great that it would be nothing to go out and, well, Father William Doyle, I'm not judging him, but I'm showing you the kind of penance that a person could do. He went out in the dead of winter, and he went into the pond up to his neck, and he stayed there for some time. And you can't stay there too long, otherwise you would die. But he would go out when it was sufficiently cold for him, for that to be a severe penance. And then he would humiliate himself. He was very intelligent. He would do something to make people think he was crazy. So in the middle of a devotion in church, he'd go up right before all the people and hold out his arms and pray. And somebody would say, look at that nut. And he was so humbled by that and so embarrassed. And yet he did it. You know.
Yeah, it would look normal.
Well, the point was, see, he was destroying his pride and that selfish self-image that would like to be at your best before everybody. You see my halo? Okay? And that's what he was destroying. And it was so humiliating. But yes, that can happen. Even the saints acknowledge their faults. St. Bernard acknowledged that he fasted so much that for the rest of his life he had what they call a queasy stomach. He couldn't eat everything. Now, people like this are often unreasonable and very much at fault. They place more value on bodily penance than they do on the denial of their own will and the virtue of prudence or discretion, which is more pleasing to God. St. John of the Cross says, quote, corporal penance without obedience is no more than a penance of beasts. Think of that. Think of that when you give yourself a beating or something and you think you're pleasing God. And that's the last thing that the Lord might want. Somebody just said, don't look at me. I must continue and we'll have questions afterward. The motive here is their appetite for pleasure that they seek in these penances. The sad consequence here is that instead of growing in virtue, they grow in vice. The opposite of a virtue is vice. Extreme on either side is a vice. It's the middle line that constitutes virtue. The opposite of hope on one side is despair. It's a vice. The opposite of hope on the other side is presumption. That's a vice too. So they grow in vice because any extreme from virtue is a vice. They are doing their own will and fail to follow the path of obedience to their spiritual guides. Through such behavior, these beginners become spiritual gluttons and proud. It is here the devil is able to stir up their gluttony in beginners by increasing their pleasure and desire for such penances. Oh, he's very gleeful. When you're in the fifth day of your fast and you're beginning to get sunken cheeks and hollow eyes, you're going to die in 5 days. You keep it up. Or, you know, keep praying. Keep your arms outstretched. Another hour is fine. And don't use any support. You'll break your back. When they are bound by obedience in certain matters, they either add to or modify what has been commanded by their spiritual director. They find obedience very annoying, and some lose all desire for certain spiritual exercise because they're commanded by obedience. They want only to do what they feel attracted to perform, and it would be better if they did not perform it at all. Some beginners so pressure their directors to allow them to do what they want that they force the permission from him if he's that weak. And if they do not grant what their penitents want, the penitents are like spoiled brats. They are so blind that they think they are not serving God if they are not allowed to do the things the way they want to. seeking their own will and satisfaction, has become their god. So they become sad, discouraged, and frustrated when their director refuses to grant permission for their penances and their desires. When they receive Holy Communion, they spend most of their time trying to experience some feelings of sweetness and delight when they ought to be quietly, humbly praising, worshiping the Lord within them. If they fail to experience any sweetness, they consider the time lost. Here we see that they place a mean value on God's presence within them. They fail to use the precious gift of faith, which tells them that God is infinite love and beauty, and He's present, and that their spirit is blessed by that divine presence, even though the senses feel nothing. This same attitude is present in other spiritual exercises where they want to reduce God to the level of feelings, and certainly are failing in faith, which is not based on feeling. We find spiritual gluttony especially present in the prayer life of beginners. They think that prayer is only good when they feel sense delight and satisfaction in that prayer. So they are under great strain when they push their faculties and emotions to the point where they try to squeeze some feelings of devotion out of their prayer time, like you squeeze a grapefruit for the juice that's in it. When they fail, they think their time was wasted and they become depressed. Because they are ignorant of what is happening, there is danger of their losing true devotion and the persevering desire to grow in prayer to please God. The danger here is that they may give up on prayer and other spiritual exercises that are so helpful because they find no sensible joy or delight in them. Impelled by this gluttony for spiritual sweetness, beginners will spend much time looking anywhere for it. Spiritual books, different spiritual subjects, often changing them, or anyone who can give it to them. They fail to understand that their dryness is induced by God, and no book, no spiritual exercise, or person can bring them the sweetness they want until God permits it. It is very important that these beginners enter the dark night so that they can be purified of this childish behavior. Such beginners are wanting in real self-denial, which can be for them a serious imperfection. When a person is selfishly given to seeking their own pleasure, they will naturally have a dislike for anything that involves self-denial. The dark night, which includes periods of temptation, dryness, and other trials, will remove such faults from beginners. A wise self-control or temperance will develop something much better in the beginner. For example, a spirit of mortification, fear of offending God, and obedience to God's will in all things. This will bring the insight that perfection does not depend on the number of our good works, nor on the delight we find in them, but on the kind of self-denial we practice in our good works. And the last two capital sins, imperfections of spiritual envy and sloth. Envy, many beginners have a feeling of sadness when they notice the spiritual goodness in others, and even feelings of grief when they see that their neighbor is more advanced in perfection than they are. They do not want others to be praised. They're sad when they learn about the virtues of others. When they are praised, these envious beginners will contradict what is said and try to diminish the compliments paid to others. Their annoyance springs from the hidden desire to be preferred in everything. Of course, this is contrary to charity, love of neighbor, and rejoicing in the good we see in one another. If there is an envy present in our charity, we can call it a holy envy. That is, we are sad when we do not have the virtues we see in others, but rejoice that others have them, and happy that others are more advanced in loving and serving the Lord. As for sloth, beginners are guilty of spiritual gluttony, are also at fault here in sloth. They become tired of spiritual exercises that do not give them a sense of satisfaction and are inclined to run away from them. This is true of prayer and prayer time. They might even give up prayer altogether. Because they seek their own will and not God's will, their spiritual sloth leads them to modify the way of perfection to suit their own will and satisfaction, rather than to deny their own will for the will of God. A good number of beginners actually want God to wish what they want, and are sad if they have to seek God's will. So they often fall into the deception of thinking that what is not their will or to their liking is also not God's will or to His liking. That's what you call rationalizing. And if they are satisfied, then God is satisfied too. So we see them seeking their own will and not God's will. Under this attitude, we see beginners becoming bored when they are asked to do what is unpleasant. They are very weak in their fortitude and diligence that is required to travel the road of holiness. They run away from anything that may make tough demands on them and are scandalized by the cross, where the soul really finds true peace and great spiritual delights unknown to those who have not suffered. This analysis of the faults of beginners should be sufficient for us to see the great need for God to bring beginners into the dark night so that He can bring them into the state of advanced souls. Through pure dryness and an inner darkness, the Lord removes their childish faults and trivial ways and forces them to grow in the virtues. Our mystical doctor writes, no matter how earnestly the beginner in all his actions and passions, he means emotions, practices the mortification of self, he will never be able to do so entirely, far from it, until God accomplishes it in him passively by means of the purification of this night. So he makes no exception. There is no exception. In other words, sanctity is not given outright. And now he begins the explanation of the stanzas, and I'm only taking one line. He just says, one dark night. That's the first line. St. John of the Cross says something very important about this night of the senses. He says, quote, this night is contemplation. That should make a person happy. Although emotionally they can't be happy because it's very purifying. It's the fire. But to be reassured that it is contemplation, that's very important. And it causes two kinds of darkness or purification in us. One dealing with the sense part of us, and the other with the spirit or the soul. So the one night will purify the senses and place them in control of our spirit. The other night will be spiritual, purifies, detaches our spirit from all that can be an obstacle to union with God, and subjects the spirit to the Holy Spirit. The night of the senses is a common occurrence, hear that? And comes to many persons. And these are the beginners in the spiritual life. The night of the Spirit comes to very few. That's according to St. John of the Cross. Now the first night, or purification, is bitter and terrible to our senses. But the second night has no comparison, because it is horrible and frightful to our spirit. Now, these are the words of St. John of the Cross. When he says it, I believe it. God's purpose in bringing beginners into the night of the senses is to lead them out of their selfish way of loving Him into a higher degree of divine love. He also wants to free them from being too tied to the senses in their spiritual exercises, as well as to the first kind of mental prayer called meditation. In this kind of prayer, our communion with God is filled with so many obstacles and distractions that the Lord wants us to pray on the level of the Spirit, where our communion with Him is more frequent and more free from imperfections. After beginners have had some experience in meditation and in the practice of the virtues, God begins to lead them into the night of the senses, In other words, one day they begin to pray their half hour for prayer, and that's it. Dry, cold, the Sahara Desert, Death Valley. If it lasts a day, that's not it. If it lasts a week, that's not it. If it lasts a month, that's not it. But if it lasts quite a while, that's it. How long, though, that depends. No one can predict when this night will take place, but it will usually occur when a person is filled with spiritual delight, faithfully performing his spiritual exercises with joy, and it seems that this state will never change. So one day, comes to pray, finds not sweetness, but coldness, dryness, and darkness. This darkness affects the entire interior life of the soul, imagination, the reasoning mind, the emotions. Meditation now becomes difficult. There is confusion and doubt about where they are, how they stand with God. There is no spiritual pleasure in the performance of their good works and devotions. In fact, they find them bitter and tasteless. The night of the senses comes sooner to beginners who are recollected than to those who are less recollected, because they are more free from the faults that plague beginners, and they also check their desires for worldly things more quickly. Reform of our appetites is a requirement for entering the night of the senses. These beginners enter this night earlier than other beginners. But the majority of beginners do enter the night of the senses, because it is common to see them suffering from dryness. So, any questions now? You should have a number of questions. Yes?
What is meant by a recollected beginner? What does that mean?
Well, take the word apart. Recollected. That means to recollect within you whatever is distracted. In other words, you're in the kitchen preparing a dinner, and then you go to pray. Well, for some time your mind's with the kitchen, right? So you recollect it. Focus on the Lord. So a mind that is recollected in the Lord is more open to the Lord's purification. Okay? Anyone else? And if you're behind me, just speak up.
Imperfection of sloth, and if you know, like when you're going through this dark night of the senses, that you can't pray, you know, you can't, you know, I don't know, like you'd be tired or you'd be distracted or something's happening to you. I mean, could you, you know, how can you tell whether you just
Whether it's sloth or the dark night?
Or the dark night, yeah.
Well, you're a little ahead of us, we're going to deal with that, but I'll try to give some answer to that.
Okay.
The difference would be that a person who's really in sloth, they have no qualms about skipping an exercise. But a person who's in the dark night, they have a delicate conscience, and they're anxious, they're eager, and they want to do the right thing, but somehow they're not doing it. The anxiety is the discerning element. Okay? See, that's the proof that they're not slothful.
How
yes.
could you change within yourself this slothfulness towards
you can.
The front things of actual grace?
This is what the Lord sweats out of us. What they have to do, of course, is do what they know has to be done, even though they're not inclined to it. That's where the self-denial comes in. See, there are some temperaments, and you've met people like that, you know, they're easygoing. They're the ones who by nature are inclined to be slothful. They do what they have to do at the last moment. You know, sometimes your children know. Supposed to take the garbage out the night before, and they only do it 5 minutes before the garbage man comes. See, that's a kind of a practical example of sloth. And different ways and different levels, some of us can be that way. Yes?
Well, you said that this can last for various times. Because ever been an example where it's never lifted till death?
I would say most of us will not reach that kind of purification. St. John of the Cross says, when he says, very few go through the second purification. Now, of course, he's only one person. He doesn't know, you know, the vast numbers that have come, yet to come, God's ways. It's only his evaluation. I am presently trying to rethink what the charismatic renewal has done to this body of knowledge when he wasn't aware that the charismatic gifts would someday be common, you know, and how the fruits of the Spirit, for example, like at each Mass we have love, joy, and peace, you know, those are gifts. We don't command them, we don't ask, don't get them when we want, but somehow they are there. And yet the fruits of the Spirit are the final product of holiness. See? They're the apple on the full-grown tree. In other words, which the saint has all the time. Now, we're enjoying that, but there's this difference, not all the time. See, like a person like Teresa of Avila, John of the Cross, had constant peace. We're not in constant peace. Sometimes we're shaken up. We come depressed, but we leave in peace.
I've listened to all this and I've read about it a long time. But in my own experience, I don't seem to be able to match anything particularly that I hear. Like, I had a conversion experience when I was 28 years old. And it was, like, sudden. I always loved the Lord, but then the time when I discovered boys, you know, I sort of went off the deep end a little bit and didn't pray and, you know, went into a really cold period. But then I had this experience, and overnight, I went from a person who would stay away from communion and would even skip Mass once in a while to someone who went to daily Mass, who on one confession the priest yelled at me, blue murder, because he said I was horrible. And 2 weeks later I went to another priest and told him I wanted to lead the life of perfection. And he said to me, quote, you seem to have conquered most serious sins. And that was in 2 weeks. And from that point, I think that was a baptism in the Spirit, even though I didn't know what it was. Of course, I seemed to get all the gifts except tongues and prophecy. And I went in this, what you call this initial honeymoon period, for years and years and years. And then when I had two little kids around 1967 and 68, I went into a sort of a cold, depressed period. But I think it was because my husband traveled a lot and I had all these kids, you know, all around. And I think it was more physiological and psychological than spiritual. But I never went back into serious sin. And then the renewal hit 10 years ago. And from the baptism in the Spirit for 10 solid years, I have not hit any night of sin, spirit, or other. In other words, I can say for 20 years, I have never experienced night of senses. And yet I'm progressing spiritually in all the other ways, like growing in prayer and in depth and in contemplation and all that. It seems like I've skipped something. So either I'm under a great delusion that I haven't started yet, or I'm an exception to the rule.
Well, we're touching on a very important question here.
Yeah.
And the question is, is there any guideline that covers all phases of the spiritual life? The answer is no. Even St. John of the Cross doesn't necessarily cover every way in which the Lord can purify us. But he does give us a large overall view of it. Okay? And the Holy Spirit writes the books, not St. John of the Cross. See? We study what the Holy Spirit does. So his ways are infinitely varied, and the dark night in its phases, how long it lasts, when it lasts, and what will happen in it, are all, the variety is infinite. And it depends on two factors. First, what kind of holiness does God want for you? The greater the holiness, the greater the purification. It's like a building. If you're going to build the Twin Towers, you're going to dig way, 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 way down. Okay? So if the Lord's going to give us like another St. John of the Cross, then he's going to dig and dig and dig. But if he wants, well, just say an ordinary saint, well, he'll dig, but who knows how far. And in God's garden, you know, there are all kinds of saints. And St. John of the Cross says, in the state of perfection, there is a great variety. But in that state, there are signs that you are in that state. And one of them is that one's whole life is centered around one thought, God's will. What does the Lord want? There's a hunger for that. And then there are the fruits of the Spirit. See? There's a constant peace. There is love. There's no depression. See? And the best thing would be to read the last stanzas of the spiritual canticle. And later on, as we go through this, we'll deal with elements of that. But if a person is deliberately offending the Lord, I mean, as a habit, they're not in the state of perfection. Do they offend God? Yes. Teresa of Avila says that. But it's not deliberate. It's because they're not that perfect, nor do they have God's power in such strength all the time that they are impervious to absolutely anything. No. See? They sometimes lose their patience. If I'm not mistaken, I told this before, but it fits in here. St. Francis de Sales, at the end of his life, had to acknowledge, very humbly, that for a period of 15 minutes, he was upset, and he lost his cool at the thought that the religious order that he founded could be disbanded and it all could fall apart. And his conclusion, that he went before the Lord and he said, Lord, where am I now? Am I starting all over again? But he was perfect. So, in other words, the Lord can allow them to experience their weakness. Of St. Ignatius, who very likely had, in the state of perfection, he kept a black book of the faults that he committed. The day he died, there was something in there in code. So, for all us poor sinners here, why, there's hope. Excuse me, I should have said me. I too general there. Yes, Mary.
All these saints, especially the greatest, you know, like St. John of the Cross, how come they have all this, I would say it's just incredible that they had such a beautiful relationship in the holy life. And like in those days, how come we don't hear too much of it in, say, our day?
Well, Mary, I would say there are people living today, we'll read about them later, or you'll meet them in heaven. They've always been in the church. They're always in the church. Some are very hidden. But we would say they're God's orchids. See, they're the real special flowers. And yet, you know, the Lord may surprise many of us. People that we have, you know, brushed shoulders with seem so ordinary. Like Our Lady. I mean, how about the people in town in Nazareth, you know? They never thought of Our Lady as being nothing more than a very gentle person, quiet, you know. But the Mother of God? How about that? And Jesus himself, you know. So sanctity, you know, doesn't have to, you know, blind everybody by its brilliance. The very simplicity of it deceives people, like Mother Teresa of Calcutta. If you met her in a supermarket, you wouldn't even take a second look at her if she weren't dressed in a sari, as the whole world knows her, you know. She had maybe a babushka on or something. You wouldn't even recognize her. Yes, here.
I was looking more in a visionary, in a real deep visionary way. Look what's happening in America today. Aren't we being humbled? I thought about the hostages. America's in the deep back of the night of the spirit. We're being challenged. People that are really following the Lord are going to have to put our priorities in order. We're being challenged with money. We're being challenged with values on television. We're challenged with institutions. We're challenged with honesty. The Congress, this is the most corrupt Congress we've ever had. You see what the president's doing. We are being challenged in the United States. We are being challenged in the whole world, in El Salvador, in the missionary field, all over. Not only in a personal way, I'm trying to see God in the news. I'm being challenged in my state. I even think that the stages of life are dark nights. When I was in elementary school level, that means when my kids were in elementary school, I never used to feel old, or I just felt like I was on top of the heap. Now that I'm in the teenage pits, I feel like I'm in a dark night. And I got a funny feeling it's because I'm out of control. The Lord is challenging me in my stage in life, middle age with teenagers, to surrender that life to Him. And I can't believe how naked I feel. I feel completely out of control, and there's a lot of pain there sometimes, but there's also a lot of peace and joy. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. Even the hostage situation, I can see so many parallels. It's a wonderful thing in a way, and yet even St. John of the Cross, we're focusing on the joy. If you read his life, he suffered. He suffered like no other guy. His own order persecuted him. How he survived is through the grace of God. He was like a 16th century saint who's showing us how to suffer today, in a way, how to survive with the Lord. That's what I got out of it.
Well, I like your insights, and there's one thing that I'd like to comment on, that you parents are being purified by your children. See? And I told you, in other words, God uses the circumstances of your life. See, He doesn't isolate you from your family and everything and put you up in the mountain. He says, okay, now, I'm going to put you in the furnace, turn it on 180 degrees, and it's going up higher. Are you ready? And it's all the Lord. And you're aware of that. And you're saying, okay, Lord. But it's the Lord in your children. See? Some are on drugs. Some are alcoholic. The pain, the agony that you go through, that's purification. In God's mysterious but wonderful way, He uses everybody, everything, every moment, every circumstance. It's all pinpointed. There's no surgery like the Lord's. It all seems accidental, everything kind of haphazard, coming together, but not with the Lord. All things, what is the expression? Work unto good for those who love God. Believe that. Very much so in the dark night. The fact that you stubbed your toes, you got a flat tire, that's part of the dark night. We have a question back
Father,
here.
This isn't about the dark night, but I've always had the impression that St. Mary Magdalene was instantly sanctified. Am I wrong?
I'd say we're too far away from the time to be able to evaluate it correctly. Mm-hmm. That would be legend, I would say. But could that have happened? Yes. Yes. I mean, her conversion from being a streetwalker to a saint, not instantly, I would say, but from that point on, she persevered in a way of life that was saintly. In other words, she didn't come into perfect virtue. Virtue is a habit of many good acts over a period of time. Well, the first few days of that conversion didn't make her necessarily a saint. But yet we do, St. John of the Cross says too, I believe, one pure act of love of God is worth all the good works in the world. And in the one moment, God could make a person at death a saint. Okay? So on the strength of a statement like that, which is true, then she could have been a saint. Yes. What about a thief on the cross? You know, this day you'll be with me in paradise. Yes.
Tremendous things. Our country has really been blessed. And God blessed America. And our hostages were freed. Another blessing was given to America. our lady is our theatrics. If we start to think negative, we will also go negative. But if we constantly think positive and God's working with us,
Well, you are saying something that has been confirmed by the saints and a lot of people who have seen the power of prayer. I wouldn't qualify the prayers like you do. The greatest prayer is the Our Father, okay? And then the Hail Mary. But we don't want to, you know, kind of pose one against the other. But it is true, in other words, that many of us are influenced by the American way of thinking, at least one phase of it. We're a production-minded people. And so the attitude there is, you don't get something for nothing. In other words, you've got to do something, and the harder it is, then the better it'll be. Now, if you say in Our Father, well, that's a lot of air. They're words. But what's involved there is an act of faith, that you are talking to an infinite being. And that infinite being can be influenced by that prayer to release a power that the whole world could not possibly understand and can change the world. Now, it's the faith behind that prayer that is powerful. See? The faith that God has given us to have power over Him, to release that power into the world. Now, the more people we have like that, yes, the more powerful prayer will be. And as Our Lady promised, through the prayer that God has given us through her, the Rosary, the Hail Mary, the Our Father, we have a concerted effort. A good example is the power of the laser beam. You focus that on one object, and it'll burn a hole through 2 inches of steel in no time. Now, prayer can be like that. It can be the spiritual laser beam. I never said this before. I don't know where this is coming from. But prayer can be a spiritual laser beam. And if all the people of God had one intention, say, to focus it on Russia, they, for one day, all the people of God focused the prayer of Our Lady on Russia and really loosened that gift of faith, what would happen? Fantastic things could happen, you know, if we believe that. So, in other words, the power of concerted effort, not divided, because we're a family. So there should be a unity there. And, yes, there's a lot to be said for that, of course. Well, we are a little bit over time.